Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
That music you hear is from the band Memories, with nonagenarian drummer Lindy Schala keeping the beat. Lindy has been drumming since he was 10. He joined the Marines at 17, was with the 6th Marine Division on Okinawa for the final major battle of World War II, but actually had his closest calls well after the Japanese surrendered, or at least what you think of as the Japanese surrender. Because even after that signing of documents aboard the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay on September 2, 1945, there were still 600,000 Japanese and Korean troops in China. They would surrender in groups over the months that followed, and Lindy Schala was there in Tsingtao on October 25, 1945, more than 2 months after Emperor Hirohito voiced his decision to surrender. On October 25th, the Tsingtao garrison of 10,000 Japanese troops surrendered to the 6th Marine Division. And China would remain very volatile in the months and years that followed as Chiang Kai-shek and the Nationalists fought for control against Mao Zedong's communist factions. You may not know that nearly a year after that surrender in Tsingtao, in October 1946 now, Marines lost their lives in an ambush on an ammunition dump near the port city of Taku. Lindy, by then a member of the 1st Marine Division Band, was literally caught in the crossfire.
We were on a train coming to play for that people that were, it was part of the 1st Marine Division that were stationed right there when the, it was either the Chinese, the Nationalists, or part of, when we first got to China, it was still probably two or three Japanese divisions. You couldn't tell who was what, but they knew who we were, you know. When they raided that dump, we got caught right in the middle. And as a matter of fact, that book shows a map of the raid at Taku, and it shows a railroad there. But it just shows the railroad right near the ammo dump. But it never tells anything that we were on a passenger car right on that railroad, and we heard the whole thing. So obviously, the article on the raid at Taku was written by somebody that wasn't there, because when we were coming in there, because First Divi had one band, used to go all over. We went from Tsingtao, which is a little bit north of Shanghai, and the railroad went from Tsingtao all the way up Tientsin, Peking, a lot of those little towns, Linxi, all the way up to where the Great Wall starts at the sea, up at Manchuria. Sometimes we stopped at each post where they had maybe a company of men. As a matter of fact, sometimes we stopped at some of those junctions that just had a couple Quonset huts, one where the guys slept and the other where the mess hall was. We got off the train and played for them. And that's how we got caught there that night there at Taku. And we got it both sides, because we were right in the middle of the two outfits firing at each other when those troops raided that dump, and they killed, I forget how many guys that were guards on there, and then we played the funeral there, which made it a difference. We had a guy in our band, he later started making an announcement for, they called it the North China Marine. It was a radio station, and he used to broadcast to everybody there. We start playing football, and we started 11-man football, but we never got any uniforms. Too many guys got hurt, so they cut it down to six-man touch. And our band officer, Officer Tahasek, we call him a band officer, but we didn't see him that often because he spoke Russian, and he was always interpreting for G2 or G3. I don't know what it was, the intelligence of the Marine Corps. Most of the time, Sergeant Dowdy ran the band, and he allowed us to have a band team. And I've got pictures of that, which shows 1st Divi Band winning the North China Championship. We had two guys that had played college football, Lou Hicks, Bertier, so they weren't just musicians, you know. But one of the biggest games we had was way up there in Chinguantao, right where the Great Wall is. The time we played the 7th Regiment officers, there were troops. I couldn't tell whether they're Nationalists or Communists, but like flies all along that Great Wall. Really, and here we are playing the game. We weren't concerned, the troops. We had some line outfits there that had rifles, and the band had stacked all their, we didn't carry M1s, we carried carbines. We stacked them on the side and we were playing the championship game. I even have pictures of it.
You played a football game with spectators on the Great Wall.
Well, they were quite a distance off, so, but we even had privates there that had field glasses, and they probably thought it was the general or some from the Marine Corps spying on them, and they were looking back, and I guys were laughing, you know. Of course, you get 18-year-old punks could care less, you know, because, hey, the war was over, but they're still more, we saw more raids in China than we did on Okinawa, you know.
Well, and speaking of the raid you were talking about, so you guys are stuck inside this train car the whole time?
Yeah, well, when we came down there, so we used to, sometimes we even traveled in cattle cars, which wasn't too hot. They'd have sometimes straw bales. Other times we rode in class. We had coaches that were made in the United States. That night we found out how good those coaches were made because we were down, most of us, we were shooting craps and we were down below the windows. Were that. And when I think the engineer must have saw the troops going across the, and he must have cut them off. You know, you could hear the whistle of the train. And then all of a sudden it stopped and we're in utter darkness. But you could hear the either side, Chinese, you know, yelling orders, who knows. We've been drinking a little, but one guy in the band gets his carbine, fires out one side, and that wasn't bad enough. Then he fires out the other side, and we were right in the middle, and we caught hell, but it was all glass. A lot of us got a little stuff from the glass, but we, and apparently they had captured a lot of those Japanese machine guns, which you could hear, you know, those Nambus were, I think they were 25 caliber. The big difference between ours and theirs is, God, theirs fire so fast. I think they went through a string of 100 rounds and, you know, go brr, brr, and you'd hear them hit the side of the car. But when it hit the glass flew, but it never penetrated the side of the cars. And then we were pretty lucky in that respect. So that's where the, I don't know who came out with that. One of our guys, remember, God protects, what is it, babies and drunks. But as a matter of fact, I got to get that book. My daughter got it from the library about the Marines serving in China from way back, the Boxer Rebellion all the way to when the communists took over. We left in 47, but there were still troops all the way till 49 when the communists actually took over.
And I know we're bouncing around, but I want to go back a little earlier with you. You talked about your two brothers and what they did in the war. But it seems like most of the guys I've talked to have a memory of when the war started. And I'm just curious for you if there's something that comes to mind when Pearl Harbor Day comes around every year, if you have a memory of December 7th, 1941, and how you found out.
We were at a football game. It was the Yankees and the Dodgers. And I tell people that, and a lot of people don't know that the Yankees had a football team. And the only guy I could remember who played for them was Buddy Young. He was a black guy from Illinois, and the other who later played for the Patterson Panthers, Ozzie Simmons. But we were watching a game, and then halftime came, and they said, all servicemen, report to your outfits. So there were guys in there and left, and then when we got out is when we found out. We were, I think it was Yankee Stadium. People were saying, Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. Nobody, a lot of people didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. Just the smart guys made, like, oh, yeah, you know. Some must have known, you know. But that's where we found out. And then we lived in Paterson, New Jersey then, and the Paterson Evening News had naturally some of the guys from Paterson that were Pearl Harbor, you know. The first guy that I can remember is a kid I went to school with, and I often wonder how the heck he lied to get in the Marine Corps because he was only maybe a year older than me. But he got killed, Johnny Wardlow, got killed on Guadalcanal, and that campaign was in 42. So Johnny had to lie about his age, and then his folks would have had a sign. But he, if you look it up, he was one of the first guys in Paterson, New Jersey, to get killed.
How did that affect you? What did that do to your outlook?
A lot of that, you know, there was my brother got called back in the service, and a lot of us, you know, young kids all try to join, but your parents had a sign for you, you know. I didn't go until 44 when you were going to get drafted when you were 18 anyway, so if you joined, you you could select the outfit, either the Marine Corps, the Navy, or the Air Force. But a lot of my friends wanted to go in the Air Force. You know, that was a big thing. I had a friend, Gibb, that was a B-17 gunner. But, it took a lot of buddies. My one buddy, Chippy Yodice, I never could understand that. His dad died when we were kids. We were young. He had about six sisters. His mom raised those six sisters, and damn it if he didn't get drafted. But he got killed at Normandy. He was in a paratrooper, yeah. But it's surprising to me, you know, especially as you get older, you resent some of the guys that didn't serve, like Frank Sinatra, some of the John Wayne, all those guys that used their influence not to serve. You don't think about that when you're young, but as you get older, you think, how the hell did those guys get out of it, you know?
But a lot of the athletes, some of the guys you were talking about earlier, like Yogi Berra, was right there at D-Day with your brother.
Not just him, a guy that I still listen to on, I got a tape of it, Tony Bennett. And I read about Bennett. He was helping some guy, some black guy from South Carolina or something like that. One of the officers reprimanded him for it, put him on some detail cleaning the outhouses. But he always talked about it. And to me, I still think he's one of the greatest singers. And there's guys, you know, what's happened today, we idolize too many phonies, really. The reason I say John Wayne is when I got out, they were making a movie there at Camp Pendleton, Sands of Iwo Jima. And there was John Wayne there, and then they were staying at the Carlsbad Hotel. I used to sit in with the band there at the Carlsbad Hotel, and old Monty knew we weren't of age. You know, here we're 18 years old, we're combat veterans, and you could drink on the base, but when you went on for Liberty, you had to show your Liberty card. If you were, I think you had to be 21. But anyway, he'd sometimes sneak us a drink. So this just before I got out, I told the guys, come on, we were in San Diego. I know the bartender here, he'll give us a drink and get there. And John Wayne was there, and he said, oh, I can't give you a drink. He said, it's a curfew or something. This guy speaks up. He said, give the boys a drink, it's around me. And I went back to the barracks that morning, and I told the guy, hey, John Wayne bought us a drink. I thought he was a big hero. And the guy said, that boy, they said he paid to stay out of the draft. And later I read about him. By God, if he did use his influence so he wouldn't be drafted. And here he made all the war movies like a hero, you know.
And what was it about the Marine Corps? Because as you said, you know, you could have gone for the Navy or the Army Air Corps. You didn't want to wait and get drafted by the Army.
My brother was in the Marine Corps, and he got wounded and got out right at the beginning of the war.
What brother was that?
My brother Al. He was the one 2 years older than me.
I just want to, you know, get the big picture of your family's contribution here. So you said your brother Johnny made the landing at Anzio, was wounded at Monte Cassino. Your brother Matt made the landing at Normandy on D-Day. He was a medic, so he had to take care of some of the worst things. And then your brother Al was a Marine. And where was he wounded?
Early part. He went to the Pacific, but he wasn't in that really that long. From the time he went in to the time he got out of bed, a year didn't go by.
But he's already gone and come back because he got hurt, and you still wanted to do what he did?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to go in the Army because if I went in the Army, I might have had to go to Italy or something like that. Same with there was a lot of German kids that wanted to join the Army, yeah, and go shoot their cousin and maybe an invasion of Germany. And that's where the Marine Corps got a lot of those guys. Probably the Navy did, too, or Air Force, or who knows. Yeah. But they knew most of those, like the Marine Corps, was mostly Pacific.
What was your welcome to the Marine Corps moment or experience?
I got to be a corporal, and then just a little bit before I got out of, I made sergeant. That was my big rank. Made that when I was in the band. Previous to that, you know, we were pretty, you know, the young guys are gung-ho, and that's what the heck they want. You know, we thought we were, me and Nick Trombetta thought we were the two best demolition men in the 6th Marine Division. But there's a lot of things the Marine Corps did for me. I say when I came back, I was on the first football team Camp Pendleton had, because a lot of service teams had teams during the war. And General Erskine, when we came back, there were guys coming in from Seattle and all over trying for that Camp Pendleton team. And at that time, I was in a band. I had a band officer that wouldn't allow us to, any of the guys, me and one other guy, went out for the team. And when he found out, he put a stop to it. But General Erskine put out the order anybody could try. So That's how I got to play football. One of the biggest games we played Destroyer Pacific that had four All-Americans in there. They called it the Service Rose Bowl the year I got out. I think it was, 48. But we played in the Rose Bowl. It was on one of the big holidays. I don't know if it was. We played Destroyer Pacific. And the one All-American I remember later became the something there at Annapolis. He was their quarterback. I don't think it was. It'll come. Let's see.
Well, maybe it'll come to you, but what position did you play?
I was a halfback. Now, guys, I tell guys I was on the first football team Camp Pendleton had, they'd look at you, what the hell did you play? You know, because now the 300-pound guys are quarterbacks anymore. Yeah, really. I kept some of those old programs. I still got some.
So how many seasons did you play for them?
Camp Pendleton won 1948. And then the last game we played a little college there, Oceanside Carlsbad Junior College. And then about six of us from that Camp Pendleton team played on Oceanside in 49. The year we played them when I was Camp Pendleton, the quarterback for Oceanside was Jamie Russell. You remember Jane Russell? That was her brother. She was married to Waterfield, who was a quarterback for the Rams. But Jamie Russell was he was a good tall kid. And my one famous thing, I intercepted one of his passes, which we helped win the game. They were marching, and I think they would have scored. And he had this guy who was pretty fast, as Jimmy Riddle. I always remember his name because he ended up playing for the Rams. I knew what they were after, and I know he went back and told them I could beat this guy, you know. So, but he did, and I intercepted his pass. That was my one famous thing that I ever did.
Well, you got a lot of things going on here, but one more question about when you played Destroyer Pacific at the Rose Bowl. I was just at the Rose Bowl, and there were 50,000 people there. So it makes me wonder, what was the crowd like when your military teams played?
They probably had about that many because those service games were free.
Well, what was that like to play in that venue?
Oh, that's, you know, the only crowd I ever played was in high school, and even then, we played at Hinchcliffe Stadium in Paterson, New Jersey. But that Rose Bowl was a big I think I just played defense there on the Camp Pendleton team.
And we've talked about a lot of things, and I talked about why you wanted to go into the Marine Corps. But what about when you were shipping out? Did you have an expectation? Were you concerned about being in combat? Were you looking forward to it? What do you think was going through your head?
You know, young punks, we couldn't wait to get in combat. It's a good thing, though, like I said, they dropped the bomb and that. But then we saw more, actually, action in China.
Which is an eye-opening reality that I'm sure some of you are learning about for the first time today. It's break time again, but there's more to come with 95-year-old Marine Corps veteran Lindy Schala of Greenwood Village, Colorado. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.